WebRadio.com, the best in chat radio designed just for you.
Good morning. Welcome to the Business Hour. I'm Ron Camacho, your host. And today the business at hand is having a talk with a 16-time national tennis champion, also a formerly ranked world's number one tennis player, Bob Litwin, who's going to share some insights about what it takes to succeed at a high level, under pressure, in a competitive environment, not just on the field of athletic competition, but in the world of business. And Bob will be sharing with us some insights from his upcoming book. I think I'm going to let Bob tell you the title. It's a mouthful. Welcome to the Business Hour, Bob.
Hey, Ron. Good morning. How are you?
I'm
cold
fine.
Atlanta, I know. Yeah, the name of the book is Live the Best Story of Your Life, A World Champion's Guide to Lasting Change, and it is a mouthful.
Live the Best Story of Your Life, A Champion's Guide to Lasting Change. Bob, I think that's a very, very, very appropriate title given, you know, what I know about what you've done as a performance coach. You have built a foundation through the years of principles that have worked for you to help you have what you also call the focused game. And you've shared that perspective and helped people go through a process that actually gets them in touch with a lot of their own personal challenges and transcend those challenges to go on to visualize success. And I think that what you do, what you bring to the party is a fresh perspective. People are constantly looking for ways of getting a leg up on the competition, whether it be athletic or in the business arena. And I think that you've come up with a very fresh approach to that focus game, to living the best story of your life. And let's talk a little bit in general terms about that basic philosophy of performance, Bob. Just share with us what you describe as a general overview of that philosophy and technique.
Sure. Well, and you know, I just want to point out it's not just about competing in the world with others and climbing vertically in the business world or through the rankings, but it's also about people's own personal competition with themselves, the desire to be better at something. And often when I'm first working with people, my question is not, you know, specific to one industry or sector of their life. It's, hey, what is it in your life that you're not doing as well as you would like to? Is there anything, whether it's an attitude that you know that holds you back, or if it's that you've always been told that you're undisciplined or that you don't have focus or that it's hard for you because of something. Anything that a person wants to improve at is something that I see as competition. And I know myself as a competitor in tennis, it's not been about climbing the rankings. It's been about being better than myself today than I was yesterday and making sure in some way that I'm better tomorrow than I am today.
Now, Bob, I don't think anyone manages to succeed at a national or an international level without some talent and without some conscious as well as some unconscious principles of learning, of discipline, of building on the talent. Did you have some basic principles even before you devised a technique and were conscious of what you call the focus game? Were there some early principles that have remained as I guess what you might call pillars for the technique, the larger technique of the focus game?
Yeah, sure. I mean, when I first started teaching tennis, actually I didn't have any background in tennis teaching. I had no real tennis teaching skills. I had taught in a high school for a couple of years, social studies. But I was now on a tennis court, and the principle that I used was one of observing and asking questions. And rather than telling people what they ought to do to be effective, I would notice when they did something that worked, and I'd ask them what they did. And sometimes somebody might say, oh, I don't know, I was just so frustrated that I just went for it. Like, okay. So then whatever I went for it means, that's what you need to be doing. So the observing what worked was more the one of the pillars than what the more traditional approach was, which is here's what's wrong and you have to fix it. It's very similar to therapy, which I think is great. I'm a proponent of it. Therapy has always been gone at things from the point of view of what's broken, what do we have to fix, where now we have the whole field of positive psychology that says, what do people do well? Let's teach other people to do that. So one of the pillars was clearly that. But also for me, I always, from the time I was a kid, I was always fantasizing my own success. I'd be lying in bed at night before a basketball game, and I would be imagining, I didn't know it was visualizing, I'd be imagining that I'd get the last shot and I would make it. And even when I started to play tennis and I was losing a lot, I always had this vision that I was going to be better, that I was going to be winning matches, that I would move up in the rankings. So my whole view of the world, personal, and this is what I tried to teach people, is can do. Yes, you will be able to. And that foundation builds in for people some sort of automatic method by which they do things to lead to that success. Does that make sense?
It sure does. Now, Bob, what do you think that you did, or what do you think was going on that allowed you to sustain that vision of yourself making that last shot? I think that a lot of people find that they can momentarily envision themselves succeeding in a specific moment, but they're not always able to sustain that positive outlook, which it would appear to me that you did for many years, because you actually made a transition from more of a basketball player to a tennis player over a period of several years, and so successfully that it's been in the last couple of decades that you've achieved that national championship status.
Well, I think that I had, like, I was definitely into some form of denial about those things that weren't working, and I was in some way delusional in my belief that things would work out. Now I see that as a technique. Then it was more like, I was like, am I crazy? Why do I think I'm going to succeed at this? But it wasn't a matter of like becoming from where I was to becoming like super. It was a matter of, if I take one step, I'm one step closer. And that's one of the foundations of the model that I use right now, which has to do with storytelling. People are limited by the stories they tell themselves. Oh, it's like too big a journey. The mountain is too high. Or I'm number 100. I'll never get to number one because it's 99 spaces away. Those old stories create bars for us. And for me, I've always been a storyteller about what I would be able to do. Oh, I can do that. I am somebody who continues to take steps, one step at a time. So, again, for me, it was, I never really sensed that I was really improving all that much because I didn't look at that. All I knew was I was a step better. And even the experience I had when I was very fortunate to achieve this number one world ranking in 2005, and when I was told, I was really, really excited for a couple of days. I mean, it's a really cool thing to accomplish that kind of number. But after a couple of days, there were a couple of things that happened. One was that I was very withdrawn and quiet when I got back from Australia, which is where I won the championships, and I realized, well, I'm number one in the world because I had a good year and I had good matches and things went my way, but I'm not the best Bob Litwin I could be. So that was just more of the same for me. I can be better. I can be a little bit better. The other thing was people were very excited, my friends, my family, my colleagues were all very excited, and I kept saying, look, it's not like I was number one, number 500 yesterday and number one today. 4 months ago, I was number three. 6 months ago, I was number five. 1 year ago, I was number seven. So the jumps are not as great as people perceive when they go from point A to point B. It's really this one step at a time methodology and way of thinking.
You know, in fact, Bob, this is an aside. It's not anything that we talked about before the show, but, you know, I oftentimes will watch a top 100 player, maybe a top 50 player, playing one of the top 10 players. And you can see they'll post the ranking of that individual, and you'll see that they went up in increments of 5 or 10 positions. But it's as if they're getting a lesson, a supremely a great lesson on the court with one of the top 10 players, someone who's playing Roger Federer or Andy Murray or Novak Djokovic, and they're getting better in the course of the match. You can see it. It's as if they're taking a lesson from a coach, and that coach is their opponent. Is that something that you perceive as well?
Well, I love playing people better than me because it forces me to figure out how to be better while I'm playing. It forces me to have more focus. I can't let anything slip against a really top player. So I love to win. I don't like to lose. That's a given. I don't think that anybody likes to lose, and I think that everybody likes to win. But I don't invest that much energy in that kind of thinking. I invest my mental energy into, like, being in a situation and seeing what I can do to just fix anything that's not working. Because my opponent may be putting me in an uncomfortable situation, that's fine. I'm going to learn what to do. Maybe not in this match, but in the next match, for sure. So I have two people in particular that are like my most difficult opponents, guys in my age group, and I love playing them. And my record against them is not a winning record, but I get so much better by playing them. They raise my bar, not only in the way they play, but in the challenges that they give me. And part of my story is I love when things are difficult. And I will go towards adverse situations because I know that after I get through them, I'm more complete. I'm better in whatever it is that I'm trying to do. So winning easy is very nice. I always say to people, hey, if you win easy, it's nice. But if you win and it's difficult, it's so much sweeter.
Now, Bob, who are those two individuals that are your greatest source of competition?
Well, there's one guy named Brian Chaney from Arizona who's legendary, and he's a doubles partner of mine. We've played on Senior Davis Cup together many times, and he's a remarkable player, and I've been fortunate to beat him a couple of times. And the other is Larry Turville, who's from Florida. And he's just very, very, very tough. He's 6'8". He's an extraordinary clay court player. And I just lost to him a couple of weeks ago in a tournament. I lost to him 6-3, 6-love. And it was one of the best matches I've ever played. It was one of the most enjoyable couple of hours on the court that I've had in many, many years. And to me, it was a big win, just the way in which we played against each other and competed. But those are the guys. There's the three of us beat up on each other.
Yes. In fact, I noticed I was looking at a historical overview of USTA champions, and I noticed that these guys were opponents and partners of yours through the years. Bob, we're going to be taking a break, and we'll come back in just a couple of minutes, and for a moment we'll talk a little bit about the relationships with Bob and Larry and sort of how you learn from each other. We're here with Bob Litwin, 16-time national champion tennis player and performance coach. We'll be back with Bob in just a bit.
This is Dr. Susan Blank, host of Detailing Addiction on America's Web Radio. As president-elect of the Georgia Society of Addiction Medicine, I urge you to contact your senators here in Georgia and ask them to vote no on House Bill 885, the so-called medical marijuana bill. For full details about the pros and cons of this bill, please check the Atlanta Healing Center website at www.atlantahealingcenter.com. We do not want to open this door in our state. Thank you.
Did you miss a show that you really wanted to hear? All of our programs are available for download on AmericasWebRadio.com and on iTunes. You can listen to your favorite programs on AmericasWebRadio.com anytime you like.
This is Michael Gannot with Insight to Israel. Every day, the Israeli Defense Force finds itself on the front line of the war with the militant arm of Islam. Surrounded by enemies from within and without, they fight for the only Jewish state. Military service is mandatory, ladies serving 2 years and men serving three right out of high school. While young people in other democracies are busy traveling or attending university, Israeli men and women gear up for basic training. In a world of heads of state, politicians, ambassadors, diplomats, and a leftist media, many times our voice at the grassroots level is drowned out. So we started an ongoing project called Hershey's for Heroes. Patriot conservatives from all over the U.S. are sending Hershey's chocolate bars with a note of thanks for defending Israel. Won't you join us by sending a sweet message to the IDF? For information, please see my Facebook page at Michael Gannot. Thank you, God bless Patriot conservatives, and God bless Israel in her struggle for sovereignty and security.
This is AmericasWebRadio.com, the best in chat radio designed just for you.
Welcome back to the Business Hour. We're here with Bob Litwin, 16-time national champion and world-ranked number one tennis champion, and also a performance coach extraordinaire. Bob has an upcoming book, Live the Best Story of Your Life, A World Champion's Guide to Lasting Change, and we'll be talking about that book. But we're talking about the kinds of lessons you can derive from the book as we go along during the program. And Bob, just before the break, you had mentioned Brian Chaining and Larry Tourville. I'm wondering, and I had noticed in the historical overview of national champions in the USTA archives that you have played these, that these guys have either been a doubles partner of yours, or that 1 year you would have won the national championship, the next year they might have won the national championship, then you won the national championship. So you've been playing with these guys for what might be a couple of decades, is that right?
Yeah, the first time I was fortunate enough to play Brian Chaney, I was 50. So I was 15 years into these tournaments before I advanced far enough to meet him. And Larry, I probably played a little bit before that. But we've been playing each other for 25 years or so at this point, and we've had great experiences. And look, these people are among the most outstanding men that I've ever met and been around. I mean, they're dedicated in their work, and they're dedicated on the tennis court, and those are two very separate things. And I've been very fortunate to be around a lot of really outstanding people, both in the business world, sports, life in general, and these guys are just, they're amazing. They're amazing in their dedication and their focus and the way they take care of themselves, and, you know, I'm lucky to be part of that group. That we continue to push age away. We really do. I mean, we're all in the 65 and over now, and yet we're getting younger every year. That's the way it feels, at least.
Well, two things come to mind, Bob. One of them is, do you, the three of you, and as well as a few of the other guys that are virtually at the top of their games that you have competed with, off and on for the last couple of decades, do you ever sit around and talk about what it is that you think are the elements of improving your games? Because it would seem to me that this is a group of guys that have both refined the approach that they take to winning and sustained that approach for longer, much longer than most people. So do you guys ever talk about that?
Well, it's interesting. I mean, I think that Brian and I have spent a lot of time together, and we stay together sometimes at tournaments, and I, as you know, I'm pretty transparent about my game. I write these blogs. I've been writing them for about 20 years about every tournament that I'm playing, and I reveal a lot. And Brian is not quite as forthcoming, but he's very precise in what he does. So he and I talk a lot about what it takes to be good for me. I know what it takes for me to be good. He knows what it takes for him to be good. And they somewhat cross over, but he's a hardworking tennis player working on his technique and his strategy and his fitness. I'm a hardworking tennis player who's always working on my mental. And that, so we have different parts of our game that we develop. Larry and I are not quite as, like, open with each other. I think that our competitive natures with each other sort of keep us a little bit more private about what we're doing against each other. But that being said, we'll probably be on the Senior Davis Cup team together. They pick four players every year, and the three of us are likely to be on the team. And when we're on the same team, we are helping each other a lot because I want them to win, they want me to win. So those are the times that I think that we reveal a lot more, but we still are competitors. So we share the way we try to get better, but we're all very different.
Is playing on the senior men's Davis Cup team, is that one of the biggest honors that's been bestowed upon you?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it's just it's a validation of a year's worth of work in your game, and representing the United States is. I mean, you hear it all the time when you watch the Olympics or any international event. It is so incredibly special to wear a USA jacket and to be identified not by your name but by your country. It's just really, really special.
Yeah, I have to imagine that it's a proud period during which you're competing and a great sense of camaraderie. Now, Bob, before we get back to talking about the focus game and Live the Best Story of Your Life, A World Champion's Guide to Lasting Change, your upcoming book, and other aspects of your philosophy for improving your performance, not just on the athletic field of competition, but in general and in business, I want to ask you one other question related to you, Brian, Larry, and a number of the other seniors. And that's the physical aspect. You had mentioned that Brian puts a lot of emphasis on staying in shape, and I can't imagine that all of you playing at senior championship levels aren't in really good condition, like easily in the 0.025%, the 99.75 percentile of fit seniors. How do you do it?
Well, I used to be in the gym a lot. I used to do a lot of walking, mostly playing tennis. I play a lot. I used to play a lot of tennis, 4 or 5 times a week, and that was my main way to be fit, and it was obviously specific for my sport. But then I had 2 hip surgeries, so that was a few years ago, and then that really it cut back on how much time I wanted to be on the court because I want this hip to last. So now I still walk. I walk outside mostly, though. I get out. I play singles 3 times a week, and that's my fitness. I'm lucky in that way. If things feel a little off, if I feel a little weak in some way, I might get in the gym and do a little bit of weight work. But pretty simple. I play tennis.
What about your diet?
I have a good diet. I don't eat a lot. I have very small portions. I eat throughout the day. I'm careful. I try and limit bad foods. And, of course, even a lot of salads and fish and chicken, try and stay away from meat. Mostly, though, I limit the amount that I eat, and I spread it out during the day.
I did notice when I met you that you had the physique of a senior version of what I might say is a cross between a Novak Djokovic and a Roger Federer. You know, that's kind of slender, lithe, agile agile appearing. I think that that's probably one of the prerequisites for being a good tennis player, particularly in the senior years, is having that ability to be agile. And I'm surprised that Larry Tocqueville, at 6'8", he must be one of the most agile tall men.
Yes,
anywhere,
and he's not heavy. And for me, look, I'm lucky. I mean, I think it's genetic. I'm thin. I don't gain weight. I weigh the same thing I weighed in high school, so that's a big advantage just on the court, because as a lot of people get older, they start to carry a little more weight, and around the tennis court, that's a step or two. And so far, I'm okay there. I mean, it may change, but, you know, I'll take it right now. But I think I'm pretty lucky in that way.
Well, that would be definitely one of my challenges. I'm certain that I'm more than a step and a half slower than I could be. If I were to drop a few pounds. I want to turn back to the focused game approach and ask you when it was that you had a sense that it was even a technique, a personal approach to the game and to competing that you could share with others.
Well, I used to do seminars in the focused game method, which was a five-step method that I had come up with 25 or 30 years ago. And these were weekend seminars that businessmen and businesswomen would come to because they wanted to improve their handicap, or they wanted to win their club championship, or just do a little better in their leagues. And, of course, they weren't full-time athletes, so they would be listening to this talk on focus. And oftentimes people would come up to me and say, like, this is really a lot like my business. Would you come and talk to my sales team? Or would you talk to my middle management or upper management people? And I was hesitant because I was a tennis pro and I didn't really see myself in that way. But using this method of storytelling that I do use with everybody now, I started telling myself a story, which I wasn't yet, but I aspired to be, which is, I coach people in how to be focused in sports, business, and life. And I started spinning that story for myself. That alone started to give me the confidence to say yes to go into an office. And then, to my own surprise, people would take the information I would give them that to me was, it was just the way I would think about things, and to them, they would say, this is profound, like me explaining to them how they could practice being optimistic, just as an example. That it wasn't me just saying, you need to be more optimistic, but it was a matter of me saying, you can train optimism, and you can become more optimistic, and that's a helpful way to be in business. So as I started going into other businesses, I started to get a lot of validation that the work had relevance. And then in the early 2000s, the hedge fund field at that time was just blowing the walls out. They were doing great. A lot of people were making lots and lots of money. And they were all looking for additional resources or consultants to help these businesses, whether it would be having a massage therapist at work, having a gym at work that would help people's performance, and they were also hiring coaches. And these coaches were coming from mostly from the mental health field, either psychiatrists or social workers, and they would come in and they would work with people, work with traders and analysts. And it just started to, like, click for me that the finance world was very similar to sports. People who were investing dollars all day long were faced with real-time decisions under pressure that they would then get instant results about, just like a tennis point, and they would have to be very good at reacting to the ups and downs of these trades throughout the day. They could be hundreds of trades that they might put on. What I was teaching was a fit for that industry.
Bob, we're going to take a break, and when we come back, we're going to talk just about how well what you do was a fit for that industry. We're here with Bob Litwin, 16-time national champion, world's number one ranked tennis champion as well. Performance coach. We'll be back with Bob Litwin right after this break.
Come on, follow Sniffles to Atlanta's go-to center for breathing easy. Do you suffer from chronic sinus headaches, recurrent sinusitis, facial pain or pressure, and chronic congestion? Well, balloon sinuplasty just could be the cure you're looking for.
Follow me and breathe easy.
Follow Sniffles.com. We treat the problem, not the symptom. Chronic sinus symptoms, gone. This could be the cure you're looking for.
Follow me and breathe easy.
This proven in-office procedure can have you breathing easy, back to work the next day, and it's done under local anesthesia. Get lasting relief, a quick recovery, and start breathing easy again.
Follow me and breathe easy.
Follow Sniffles.com.
Hi, I'm Paisley McDonald, and I'd like to invite you to listen to my show, At Home with Paisley, every week, Thursday at 3 p.m. Eastern, for practical advice and stylish living for your home and office.
Cook Immigration Partners is your passport through the immigration maze. Whether it's help with E-Verify in your business, or help in how to document a new employee under the new I-9 rules, or if you marry a foreign national, Cook Immigration Partners is your best choice for a legal advocate. Call us today at 866-286-6200. That's 866-286-6200. Or visit us on the web at www.immigration.net.
This is AmericasWebRadio.com, the best in chat radio designed just for you.
Welcome back to the Business Hour. I'm Ron Camacho, your host, and we're here with Bob Litwin, a 16-time national U.S. Tennis Association champion and formerly ranked world's number one player, and a performance coach that has not only helped athletes get in touch with some of their challenges and techniques for overcoming those challenges, but also with business people. And before the break, we were talking about Bob's exposure initially to the financial field and to hedge fund managers. And Bob, pick it up from there and tell us just how well you were a fit to help hedge fund managers up their game. And then we're going to talk about the technique itself. We'll walk people through the live your story approach that you take, which is fascinating.
Well, the fit with analysts and traders is that they're constantly aware of their results and where they stand because it's flashing up on their screens in front of them. And when I first started to work there, I started to work with them on how they are in between the trades. How are they reacting to the trades? If they're getting frustrated and irritated, then that would be something that I'd be working with them on, training that they could have a different or a more effective reaction. So that might be something that it might be as simple as, after I make a trade, I push back from my desk and I close my eyes and take a deep breath. Now, of course, at the beginning, people would say, well, what does that have to do with my P&L? And, of course, my answer was, if you knew why taking a deep breath right now could improve your P&L, you'd have been doing it all along. What I would encourage them to do would be to practice doing something like that, or something like if maybe the market wasn't cooperative, they might have gotten the information right, but the market reacted because of something that was happening in Greece. I would encourage them to, again, pull back, step back, put space in before they put that next trade on. Just the way a tennis player, if something didn't work, rather than just stepping up and trying to hit an ace because they lost the last point, to step back, to see it as a single point unrelated to what happened before or what will happen after. So this was something that the whole idea of treat every single investment or every single trade as its own separate trade unrelated to anything else was a way that they could be more focused on doing the right thing. Now, that doesn't mean those people who are listening that are in finance, I understand that overall P&L and what somebody's book, what they have on the page, does impact on what their trades are. But basically, if they can be in the present, they're going to be better. And that's fundamental to all performance. Almost everything that we do well is done when we're not thinking too much, but we're in the present, that we're dealing with what's right in front of our face.
And do you think, Bob, that being on what could be characterized as an even keel, you know, not too high, not too low, allows you to be more focused?
I think everybody's different, Ron, and I don't make that kind of judgment or statement. In fact, there was one guy had said to me, I had seen him banging the desk after some obviously trade that didn't work. And I went up to him, I said, boy, you know, it's like, what are you angry about? Well, this trade didn't work. I said, well, does being angry right now help you? And he said, yes. It makes me try harder. So I said, okay, well, then we have to get you to be angry more often, because the only time you're angry is when you miss a trade. And if you're saying it makes you better, let's find a way to get you angry more time during the day. You know, and he laughed about it, but, you know, if he really thinks that being angry is good, or if somebody is, you know, some people, they need to be calm. Some people need to be really edgy. Some people need to be walking around. Some people need to be sitting. Some people need to slump. Some people need to sit up. I don't think there's one way. I think that the important thing is that people get in touch with what really works for them. What is the story that works for you?
Sort of like if being a John McEnroe and fired up in that way works, go ahead and engage that approach. And if being on an even keel like a Pete Sampras works for you, go ahead and engage that approach.
Right. I'm very, very careful to never tell people what, you know, the way I think they should be. I know the way I need to be. But just like in those early tennis lessons, I worked with people and I said, well, why did you hit such a good shot there? And they said, well, I did this. And I said, okay, then that's what you're going to work on. That people give me the information about what makes them good. And that's, you know, if we talk about the model, that's, you know, one thing that I'll explain happens with this model.
Now, Bob, I met you at a recent U.S. Tennis Congress workshop. It was a very comprehensive workshop that was dedicated to helping people improve their tennis game. And you were conducting one of the most popular sessions that weekend entitled Live Your Story. And during that session, you shared a really moving combination of stories from a young female athlete who, at a very early age, she was learning with your help to get in touch with what were the perceived obstacles to her success. And soon thereafter, you helped her to visualize very specific elements to succeeding. And then later on, and you shared with the group that you had just received an email from this young woman who was sharing with us that she was able to reach an even higher level of awareness or focus and achieve success. I'm wondering if that would be a good example for you to share with our listeners, because it was really quite an amazing transition that was very apparent in what you read to us, which is what she had written.
So, you know, I'd like to share that, but let me first just give a brief outline, brief explanation of what the storytelling model is, and then it'll be pretty apparent how what she did really was following the model and how it worked for her. So, is that all right?
Yeah, perfect.
Okay, so storytelling basically is this. People are always telling stories about different things they do. If they ascertain there's something at which they want to be better, I basically say to them, so, you know, tell me about yourself. Just tell me what your stuff is. And they start to explain things like, as you said before, like, well, certainly if I lost a couple of pounds, I'd be getting that extra step or two on the court. So that's part of your story. Another person's story might be, you know, I don't have enough time in my day to practice. Or I lose focus. You know, people generally know what it is about their own personal game, whether they're a mom or a dad or a spouse or a father, son, daughter, or business person, boss, or somebody that has to report to a boss. Everybody has a sense of what they could be better at. So as people write their old story about anything they want, it's a very simple process. They don't need to be a good writer. They can just write a word like undisciplined. Then once they've written it out, my simple question to them is like, okay, so is this working for you? Well, no, that's why I wrote the story. The next step is the simple step of, okay, let's write a new story, a story of who you might be about this thing. So if a person's thing is, I'm undisciplined, their new story is, I'm a master of self-discipline. This is just one example. Well, when people write that new story, which I help them do, they say, but I'm not. And my answer is, well, of course you're not. That's why it's a new story. It's who you aspire to be. And it's important to note the word be. It's not about what you're going to do, like I'm going to lose weight. No, it's about who you're going to be, which is I am a master of self-discipline. Once people write these two parts out, it's amazing how they already start to change. Just the awareness that they're telling themselves a story that's not working makes them more alert. When they write the new story of who they might be, sometime in the day, they'll be faced with an opportunity to lean one way or the other. It might be they're at lunch and they're ordering something and, well, I usually get chips, but I'm going to work on my discipline because I aspire to be somebody who is a master of self-discipline. So these opportunities exist all day long to become the new story. Okay, so that's very simply what the method is. And I assure people who are listening, if you write a few things about your old story, you will already start to change in the day that you write it, because you will be alert and aware. So this track, you want me to tell you about the track kid now?
Yeah, I sure will.
Because she is like, she's amazing. She came to me, in her senior year of high school. She was already very good. She held a couple of state records. She was a middle distance runner, 800 meter, 1500 meter. But she had just struggled in a very big race at Madison Square Garden in the mile. She had come in dead last, didn't do well. And she sat down with me and I said, so tell me about yourself. And she basically said these things. How are we doing on time before our break?
Well, we're going to take a break in about 2 minutes.
Okay, so we'll get the old story before the break.
Exactly.
So her old story was, and this is basically what she said to me, I get really nervous on days of races. These feelings escalate on race day, and I often hope the race will be canceled. I worry I won't be able to handle the pain in the race. As a runner, I guess if you're really working at it, you're in pain. I experience self-doubt and have thoughts of stopping. I'm racing fear that I'm not as good as my competitors. I put pressure on myself. I lose energy before races because of too much anxiety. I panic in races. My legs feel heavy and fatigued. Even if I race great, I usually get sick afterwards. So I look at her and I go, like, how do you even run if you're carrying all this with you? But, of course, I know. I mean, so many of us are effective even though we're carrying around stories that don't work for us. So she wrote, I had her write this story out. She was a pretty good writer. She wrote it out. A couple of days later, we immediately worked on the new story. The new story was basically the opposite of her old story.
And Bob,
the new story was, all races are the same for me. I always try my best. I get excited and eager on days leading up to my races. As the race gets closer, I get more and more excited. All races are great opportunities. Pain is the beast that's part of running. I handle pain like a champion. When the pain comes, I challenge myself. I know myself. I know who I am as a runner. I'm confident in what I can do. I don't worry about other competitors. I deserve to be racing at a high level. I'm just as good as everyone else who toes the line. My mental fitness equals and often exceeds my physical fitness. People who watch me race say that I run bravely with lots of guts. They say I'm a fighter and a fierce competitor. I run with all my heart and leave the track with no regrets. I can't wait to be this new person.
Bob, that's a great story. We're going to have to take a break.
Good.
We'll be back, and we'll talk a little bit more about that story and the third story with Bob Litwin, performance coach, right after this break.
Do your children know where their food comes from? At ConnectingFarmToFork.com, there's all kinds of ways to help your child understand how 300 million of us here in America stay nourished, clothed, and healthy. Activities, food facts, and farm visits help young people learn about America's hardworking farmers and have lots of fun doing it. Visit ConnectingFarmToFork.com today for a learning experience that'll really grow on you. ConnectingFarmToFork.com, brought to you by the people who care at Feedstuffs Food Link.
Did you miss a show that you really wanted to hear? All of our programs are available for download on AmericasWebRadio.com and on iTunes. You can listen to your favorite programs on AmericasWebRadio.com anytime you like.
Solution providers, are you aware of the Institute for Healthcare Consumerism's multiple marketing platforms? You're invited to get a little closer to IHC with our Solution Provider Membership Marketing Program. Through IHC's exclusive Solution Provider Membership, your business gets an all-access pass to engaging your prospects. This membership embeds your business within the Institute, which immediately aligns your company, its solutions, and your key executives with the nationally credible IHC brand and shows your support of the healthcare consumerism movement as a market-wide solution. And that's just the beginning. Contact IHC's Managing Director, Brent Macy, today at bmacy@theihcc.com.
This is AmericasWebRadio.com, the best in chat radio designed just for you.
Welcome back to the Business Hour. We're here with Bob Litwin, and we've been talking about Bob Litwin's technique for helping people to live their story and his upcoming book, Live the Best Story of Your Life, A World Champion's Guide to Lasting Change. So, Bob, I want to pick it up because before the break you were telling the next story in a combination of stories from a young female athlete. Give us some of the highlights of that story again. And then, if you could, there was that third letter that I thought was extremely eloquent and articulate on the part of this young woman about how she was moving forward to succeed.
Right. So again, parts of the old story was that she would get nervous on days of races, and then the new story would be, I get excited on days of races. That she was concerned about the pain in running. The new story was, pain is my running partner. Experiencing self-doubt, the new story was, I know myself, I belong in this race, and so forth and so on. So the old story is our own doubts, our questions, some of our weaknesses, or the way we believe things, attitudes. The new story is just a switch that we make to a better version. And even though we're not that person at the start, slowly but surely, or really not slowly but surely, sometimes very quickly, we start to take steps away from the old story towards the new story. And just as an example, with this particular person, for her to work with the idea of I get more and more excited rather than more and more nervous, it was relatively simple. She knew how to reduce nervousness as an athlete by stretching, lying on the ground, closing her eyes, doing deep breathing. So instead of her getting worked up and nervous and pacing, she started to do certain relaxation exercises. They weren't that complicated. But the strength of her old story used to take over. She believed her old story so much that she never did what it would take to be more relaxed because she had always been told and always felt herself, I get nervous. So the new story of I get relaxed before matches, before races, she started to do what it would take. And that's what people do. People have been doing this their whole lives. Maybe you, Ron, decided you wanted to have a radio show, and people would say, well, how are you going to do that? I don't know, but I'll figure it out. And that's what people do. So this runner then, right around the time we met, had sent me something, I think that weekend. It was a piece that she wrote about why she runs. And this is what it is. Here it is. This is beautiful. I run to enter the free state of flow that I call my zone. In my zone, the pressures of the outside world cannot touch or faze me because I am truly free, free of worries, free of fears, and free of doubts. I am untouchable in my zone, and I am blissfully happy. Running is my escape from the real world into my world where I have control. In my running world, the only time that matters is the one ticking on my running watch. The only thing I feel is the beautiful burn of my lungs and the rhythmic beat of my heart, the strain of every muscle and the rise of sweat from my every pore. The only thing I see is the trail or track I choose to run and conquer. Running is the most enjoyable part of my day because I connect with myself in ways that most people are afraid to. I connect with my fears and with pain, and by overcoming these beasts with a smile every single day, I grow tremendously strong. I become a fighter, a competitor, a better servant to God and to my family and friends. I become the person that I dream to be. So to become the best that I can be, I have just realized that I need to keep running. Thank God I'm crazy enough to love this sport. Can't wait to continue my journey tomorrow. So, I read that and I get chills. That is her new story that she continually works to move towards. And, I mean, after we started to work, she did win the Scholastic National Mile several years ago. Now she is a sophomore at a top Division I school where she this weekend is running in the Nationals out in Albuquerque, running the 800 meters. She's had a couple of top times in the nation in her events, and she continues to grow, and she's moving in the direction of the Olympics, telling stories.
Now, Bob, one of the observations I made when you read that story at the U.S. Tennis Congress seminar was that this woman had become really articulate and even eloquent in her storytelling, and I'm wondering, because you have a background in English from the University of Michigan, so you have this foundation, in essence, for storytelling, and I can't help but think that was part of the evolution, is that you drew upon this background you had. Do you do anything consciously when you're working with clients that actually help them become better storytellers?
Well, I push them to tell inspiring stories. As far as the writing goes, I don't really work on them on being good writers. Some are and some aren't. A lot of people will say to me, oh, I'm a terrible writer. And I said, well, that's fine. You can write terribly. Just write down what your story is. It doesn't matter. It can be sloppy. It doesn't need to be a great narrative. This person in particular is an extraordinary writer, and I mean, I hope someday that maybe she and I can write a book together about her experiences and her growth. But right now, we're staying focused on her performance in her sport and the work that I'm doing with the people on Wall Street or other businesses. The work is about them putting the energy into getting clear on what their old stories are. That's their starting point, and what their new stories are, which are the stories of where they're going in their lives. If they write well, that's nice, but if not, it's okay.
And in fact, you know, Bob, strangely enough, the approach that you take is an approach I take with my clients when they think they want some really impactful full-page ad, and they have a headline in mind, but they can't quite put their finger on it or copy that's really dynamic and impactful. And I just say, write down one word, you know, write down just a couple of words, a phrase, you know, and help me help you by just getting out little tidbits of that story. I want to turn to the book again, Bob, Live Your Story, or Live the Best Story of Your Life, A World Champion's Guide to Lasting Change. And I love the title. It's a mouthful, but I love the title. You have chapters in that book entitled The Beast Before the Bounty, Welcome to Your Personal Oz, 50 Ways to Leave Your Own Story. Let's start with The Beast Before the Bounty.
Well, that chapter is basically the chapter about writing your old story. You know, for a lot of people, I remember John Lennon said, living is easy with eyes closed, misunderstanding all you see. So this is about, you know, writing about your own beasts before you get to the real special part of your life, which is the bounty. That's just the opening chapter.
Welcome to Your Personal Oz. Tell us about that.
Well, Welcome to Your Personal Oz is your new story. It's where you're going. And it's the idea of being, writing a story about being, not doing. And it's no more wishing and longing and wanting. And it's a story of yes and who you really want to be. And it's really the ride of your life.
And how about 50 ways to leave your old story?
Well, there are a lot of tools. There are about 50 tools in the book, and they're not, you know, they're not so much techniques, but they're just ways of thinking. Even something like be patient, that's a tool. Stay positive, that's a tool. And, of course, 50 ways to leave your old story is based on the Paul Simon song, 50 ways to leave your lover. Although you're not leaving your lover, you're leaving your enemy almost.
Well, Bob, I really want to thank you for taking the time to be on the Business Hour to learn more about ways to live the best story of your life, a world champion's guide to lasting change. Keep your eye on the Amazon site, and also go to just Google Bob Litwin, L-I-T-W-I-N. You'll have access to some of Bob's blogs, and you'll learn more about what he's up to even beyond the book. So thank you so much, Bob, for taking the time to be in the Business Hour.
Thanks so much for having me, Ron. I wish the show were called The Business Day because I could keep going all day long.
Well, we might have to have you back on for Chapter 2. You've been listening to The Business Hour here at America's Web Radio. I'm Ron Camacho, your host. We're on Fridays from 10 to 11 a.m. Have a great weekend, and we'll see you on the radio next week.